And hello, Sunsounds listeners. This is Andy Bobick, which means, once again, it's time for the Children's Story Hour. And as always, I'm glad you could join me today for a good variety of children's stories. Like always, the first half hour, I'll be reading picture books. And then the second half hour, I'm going to continue with a novel that I've been reading now close to 2 months, titled Angus Thongs and Full Frontal Snogging, Confessions of Georgia Nicholson. But first, let's begin today's program with their picture book titles. I'm going to start off with a book titled Getting Us to Grandma's. And then it's Eyes That Weave the World's Wonders. One Day at a Time, a story about healing from divorce. Sparrow Loves Birds. My Two Border Towns. And if we have time, I'll finish up the first half hour with Our Lake. So it should be a lot of fun. Let's get started with our first picture book today, titled Getting Us to Grandma's. Uncle Travis is getting married tomorrow. Nikki's family is going to the wedding. It's a long trip that starts in Toronto and goes all the way to the Bronx in New York City. I can't wait, she says. All of her cousins will be there. Into the trunk of the car, Mommy and Daddy cram boxes of black cake and two big blue suitcases. They even bring an empty tub to pee in. How far is it? Nikki asks. More than 500 miles, Daddy says. We'll reach in the morning. On the highway, Nikki sees signs with the names of faraway places and numbers that show distances. She traces the lines on the page of the big map book, Following the Way. I'll take that, her brother says. Langston, says Nikki, reaching for the book. Quiet, Mommy says. Your father needs to focus on driving. Maya falls asleep. Then Mommy and Langston do too. Nikki can't sleep. She wants the map book so she can see Florida, where her grandpa lives now, and Atlanta, D.C., and Boston, where her cousins live. She thinks about the black globe at home, with different countries in pink and orange, yellow and purple. England, where some cousins live, the lands in Africa, where her ancestors came from, and Jamaica, where her family's roots run deep. When they get to the border at Niagara Falls, Mommy wakes up and hands the passports to Daddy, who hands them to the agent. He inspects them, then sends the family on its way. Daddy turns up the radio as the car drives across the bridge. Nikki sees more signs. I-90, Buffalo, Rochester. Maya sighs and turns in her sleep. Her foot kicks Nikki. Ow! Maya wakes up and starts to cry. Shh, Mommy says, as she calms Maya back to sleep. The car gets quiet again, except for snoring. If only Nikki could reach the map book. She sighs. How many more miles now, Daddy? You're still awake, he laughs. Still quite a ways to go, my co-pilot. Daddy, can I have the map book, please? Nikki says. I just want to see where we're going, please. Nikki finds the page that says New York State, filled with names she loves. Kahaya Lake, Syracuse, Utica, Albany, Schenectady. I need to take a break. Daddy drives to a service station off the highway. Maya fuses and Mommy shushes. Langston and Nikki get out of the car to stretch their legs. Daddy is gone for a while, but as soon as he comes back, they're on the road again. Nikki sees the sky change color. "It looks like it's going to rain," Daddy says. "Poughkeepsie, Peekskill, New Rochelle." Raindrops fall, then a shower, then sheets of water. The windshield wipers click-clack. Nikki can barely see the signs along the highway now. They drive over a big bridge. She sees water below. A toll booth at the end. "Daddy, I think you missed an exit," she says. "Nikki, we are going the right way." There are more exits and signs for different places, but no Bronx. The trees disappear, and apartment buildings, houses, and factories take their place. "I'm sure we should have seen the exit by now," says Daddy. "I can help," says Nikki, already following the lines on the map. "Maybe I should just pull over," says Daddy. "I know the way, I promise." "Okay, co-pilot Nikki, where to?" "We can keep going here, Daddy. If you come off at the next one and turn around, we can get there." "Now, what does your map say?" asks Daddy. "Bronx Expressway," says Nikki, and the car drives fast. "Keep going to Westchester Avenue." "Now I know the way. Thank you, Nikki." Daddy follows the signs and exits the highway. He slowly drives through flooded city streets. The subway trains screech overhead. Daddy turns up the radio. Mommy and Langston wake up to a cranky Maya. Nikki yawns. "You're listening to Shanna John on WBLS. 107.5 FM, says the voice on the radio. They turn onto a street of brown row houses and stop in front of one. The family steps out of the car into the sticky, humid air. "You reach already?" Grandma smiles. "We make good time," says Daddy. Thanks to Nikki. Eyes That Weave the World Wonders. Every year, my family poses for pictures, running and laughing and hugging and jumping and standing and squatting and smiling, in matching clothes and matching shoes and matching laughter. Everyone matching in every way. Except me. No one in my family has eyes like me. My mom has eyes like ocean waves, lapping at shores of sand, that sparkle as they tumble with the tide. Her eyes fill with fire when we wander halls of paintings and portraits, sculptures and scenery. She opens them wide and shares her soul with me in thick brushstrokes and fine lines dipped in rainbows of color. And the little girl's eyes are oriental. When Mom looks at me, it's like she sees me for the first time. Every time, her eyes tell me I'm every wish, she whispered into the evening air. A masterpiece, more magnificent than the dreams she clung to before I arrived. My dad has eyes like a summer garden, with golden sunflowers bursting between green leaves, always turning toward the light. His eyes bloom bright when we go to his secret spot, where the fish bite best. The stream speaks, the trees chatter, the animals amble by, and my dad says the fish are going to bite today. But his eyes say sharing this moment is magic he treasures more than all the fish in the world. Sometimes our lines get crossed. They twist and turn, and I don't know how to untangle every loop. My dad takes my hand and his eyes tell me it'll be okay. Some knots bind us with bonds more visible than blood. My parents' eyes don't look like mine, but through them I see a world full of wonder, a world that made us family. Still, I know somewhere there is someone who has eyes that kiss in the corners and glow like warm tea, just like mine. There are trinkets that traveled with me between lives, stories I've been told so many times they've become memories. I'm not sure are mine. A one-eyed rabbit with a yellow bow I used to match in size. A handmade hanbok with a sea-green skirt and sleeves the color of sunrise. A cotton white blanket that wrapped me in warmth as I watched myself rise to the skies. I wonder who and where and why and what if and what happened. All I know for sure is that tears can talk, and they tell me sometimes love must look like letting go. I've learned that eyes are more than matching. I have eyes that spin stories and weave the world's wonders. My eyes fill with fire and bloom bright with light that bends through mist and dew. They're silk strands that soak up the sun and shimmer with the hues of hopes and dreams. I braid into tales only I can tell. My eyes wrap the yarn of every story I know into the stitches of stories I don't. My questions are eyelets through which I tie the whispered wishes of the past to the fearless designs of my future. My eyes that spin stories and weave the world's wonders are connection. They are mom and dad and people I see in my dreams. They are me and they are wonderful. One Day at a Time, a story about healing from divorce. Poppy, Robin, Mommy, and Daddy do everything together. They scale mountains and swim rivers. They discover rare and magical creatures. They fly to the moon and back again. Each spring, Poppy, Robin, Mommy, and Daddy plant sunflower seeds. And each summer, their sunflowers grow tall. Taller than Poppy, taller than Robin, shining bright and golden. But this summer, everything is changing. Mommy and Daddy aren't going to live together anymore, Daddy says. We'll have two homes instead of one, explains Mommy. Some things will change, but other things will stay the same. We'll always be a family, says Daddy, and we'll always love you. Poppy and Robin don't want anything to change, but changes are happening anyway. They talk until they run out of words. They cry until they run out of tears. And they hug. There are always more hugs. It will get better, Mommy and Daddy promise. It will get better and brighter, one day at a time. But some days are hard. Poppy and Robin have big, mixed-up feelings. Sometimes their feelings pop out when they least expect it. At the playground, at the supermarket, Robin talks about his worries, big and small. Poppy doesn't always feel like talking. Robin tells all his friends at school. Poppy doesn't want anyone to know. They both have lots of questions. Mommy and Daddy try to answer them all, even the tricky ones. And together, they help Poppy and Robin choose the tallest, brightest flowers to take to their new homes. Poppy and Robin have two homes now, one with Mommy, and one with Daddy. Some things stay the same. Their school, their friends. Pancakes on Saturdays. But other things are different. The front doors, the carpets, the smell in the hallways, the views from their rooms. And when Robin wants to explore wild and dangerous jungles, to map new and uncharted territories, sometimes Poppy is not in the mood. Poppy and Robin stay in one home or the other. They have new hiding places to explore and new games to play. They find new mountains to scale and new rivers to swim, new stories to share and new memories made together. But sometimes it feels like something is missing. In spring, Robin discovers something tucked away in the shed. "Our sunflowers," cries Poppy. "They're not so sunny anymore," says Robin. "Look," Poppy says, "are those seeds?" "Hundreds," says Robin. "Thousands," laughs Poppy. Poppy and Robin have an idea. They collect the seeds, brushing them gently from the flower heads. And now they have hundreds, thousands of seeds for planting. "Enough for both of our gardens," says Poppy. Poppy and Robin watch and wait. They scale mountains and swim rivers. They discover rare and magical creatures. They fly to the moon and back again. And one day, seedlings spring up in one garden and the other. Their sunflowers grow taller and taller. Robin and Poppy are feeling better and brighter. One day at a time, everything is getting easier and lighter. Spring turns to summer, and their sunflowers grow. Taller than Poppy, taller than Robin, shining bright and golden. Poppy, Robin, Mommy, and Daddy will always be a family. They hug. There are always more hugs. They laugh. There is always more laughter. They grow. They are tall and strong and bright. There is plenty of love for everyone. Sparrow loves birds. Sparrow is a curious girl. She loves her busy town. There is so much to see and hear. From her yard, she can see all around. Sparrow sees cars zooming by, neighbors walking their dogs, and children playing on the sidewalk. Sparrow hears trucks honking, dogs barking, and laughter everywhere. But what Sparrow loves most about her town is watching birds fly and hearing them sing. She's even named after a bird. Sparrow loves learning the names of birds. Learning about birds isn't hard if she uses her eyes and ears. Sparrow grabs a pad and crayons to draw each bird. Then she runs outside with her backpack to take a look around. Sparrow learns about birds by the way they move. She sees mockingbirds flap from fence post to fence post. Thrashers hide in the bushes. Robins hop on the ground. Swallows swoop from the treetops. Vultures circle up high. Geese waddle and peck the grass. Woodpeckers hammer the trees. Hummingbirds are Sparrow's favorite. They are so small and so fast. They zoom quickly past, going forward, backward, and sometimes upside down. Sparrow also learns about birds by their colors. Some birds have very bold feathers that make them stand out. Cardinals are the reddest of reds. Blue jays have blue crest on top of their heads. Starlings have colorful spots and bright yellow beaks. Some birds have colors that make them blend in. Mourning doves are brown and gray. Sparrows are brown and white. Red-tailed hawks blend in with their brown, white, and black feathers, and also stand out with their red-orange tail. But sometimes birds are hard to see, so Sparrow uses her ears instead of her eyes. Sparrow learns about birds by listening to their song. Caw, caw, caw is the call of the crow. Some birds sing their name like a chickadee. Chickadee, chickadee. A towhee reminds you to drink your tea, drink your tea. Robin whistles, cheer up, cheer up. A tuft titmouse calls for Peter, Peter, Peter. A Canada goose honks loudly, honk. At the end of the day, Sparrow has many drawings of birds. Lots of different types live in her town. She just has to look and listen carefully for them. Do you want to give learning about birds a try? All you need are your ears and your eyes. Birds can be identified with patience and time. If you look in your town, what birds can you find? My two border towns. Every Saturday, my dad wakes me up early. Come on, mijo, he says. Vamos al otro lado. The other side is not so far away. Just down the road, right past my school. Mama gives us a kiss and a list. It's different every time we go. I grab my special bag, hold it tight, as I follow Dad, thinking of what's inside for my friends. As we drive through town, we pass my favorite spots. Neighbors line up early for Daisy's yummy pastries. At a stoplight, Dad calls to the newspaper man, holding out a dollar. Aquí tiene. Don Memo, thanks. Before I know it, we reach the broad river, a watery serpent that glints with the dawn. Dad reminds me Conitinctas once lived here, before all this was Mexico, both riverbanks. Now we're two countries. We pay to cross. Morning, says the U.S. Customs Guard, taking Dad's cash with a sleepy frown. On the other bank, the great eagle greets us. Dad waves at the soldiers, and they tip their caps. No one searches through my bag this time. I say thanks to the Virgin. We drive up the narrow main street till Don Chava flags us down and helps us park. He and my dad shake hands. Le quito la troca, he says with a smile. You and your boy have fun. This town's a twin of the one where I live, with Spanish spoken everywhere just the same, but English mostly missing till it pops up like grains of sugar on a chili pepper. We have breakfast in our favorite restaurant. Dad sips Café de Ola while I drink chocolate. First up on the list, my dad announces, we visit your tios and pick up Mom's earrings. Down uneven sidewalks, our feet tap, tap, tap to trumpet tunes bouncing out of stores. We weave our way through street side stalls, chatting with vendors, promising we'll be back. When we reach my aunt and uncle's jewelry shop, I give them big hugs and high-five my cousins. Mateo starts complaining about the town mayor. My brain gets so bored, I can't stop my yawns. My primos whisk me away to play soccer in the vacant lot next door. It gets hot, so we're lucky the Palentero comes by. We cool our tongues with palentes, mango, and melon. Suddenly, Dad joins in for a dribble and goal. Then he reminds me we have more to do. Walking back, we check our list. For ourselves, we need Mexican Cokes, avocados, a jar of honey. The list says our friends need t-shirts, chanchlas, bottled water. I think they need cold, sweet gansistos and lots of chewy glorias, too. Dr. Sanchez has Mom's prescription ready, along with other medicine that Dad requests. We load up our truck. Dad gives Don Chava a tip. Before we head for home, there's one last stop. The most important visit, Dad says. We have a duty to care for our gente. I nod and pick up my bag full of my favorite comics, notebooks and pencils, game cartridges. I add the things we bought today. I hope all the kids will enjoy them. As we get on the bridge, Dad pulls to one side. I jump out with the bag and look for my friend. A line of people camp along the edge, entire families from the Caribbean and Central America. Refugees, Dad calls them, stuck between two countries. The U.S. says there's no room, and Mexico says it can hardly look after its own gente. Elder sees me and rushes over. His hair is longer than when we first met, almost 6 months back. Acer, he shouts. Mia quionte, I reply. We do our special handshake, and I give him the bag. Elder's dad joins my dad in the truck. The line crawls on. I show Elder each item, explaining my choices. We give his mother the medicine. She tells me a joke, and the other kids gather to borrow comics. Dad honks. Till next time, amigo, I say, hugging Elder and heading for the truck. An hour goes by before we're halfway across. We take out our passports, cards that give us the freedom to travel back and forth. I wish Elder could come to our town, I whisper. We could jump on my trampoline and draw our own comic. Soon, mijo, Dad says, it's unfair to make him wait, since our country has room for his family right now. But when they get their chance at last, we'll welcome them with open arms. All the way home, I imagine a wonderful day when all my friends from the other side can go back and forth between my two border towns just like me. Okay, I'm going to finish up the first half hour of today's program with a picture book titled Our Lake. Today, brother is taking me up to swim in the lake like father used to. Be careful, brother warns. Remember, the hike up is long and steep. I nod like I'm not afraid. At the peak, the doomed sky swaddles us in heat, and the water glistens below. Brother takes off his shirt, I take off my shirt. Brother stretches, I stretch. Brother walks toward the edge, I stand behind him. I watch him press his arms tight to his head and slip neatly into the lake. For an instant, brother disappears, and the water stills. Then he emerges, wet and triumphant. It's nice and cool down here, brother calls, bobbing up and down. Suddenly, my stomach is full of stones. How did I ever do this before? Jump, brother shouts. I inch forward until my toes meet the edge. The water looks so far away. Jump! Brother shouts again. The ground wiggles. I close my eyes. On the inside of my eyelids, I see Father. I watch him stretch, soar, splash. Father turns toward us and beckons us into the water with a grin. Father's laugh leaps through my bones, making them bird light. When I open my eyes, his joy is still there, humming in my limbs. Jump, brother shouts one last time. And now I do. Now I become an arrow, the way Father taught me. Now I soar. The wind whistles its approval as I head back to earth. As I approach the water, I see someone coming toward me, reaching for me as I reach for him. He has my nose and my eyes, but it's hard to tell what else we share in the moment before we meet in the middle. You did it, brother cheers. His smile is crooked, as if half of him is happy and the other half is not, as if maybe he is remembering Father too. I want to thank him for bringing us here, but I can't find the words. Instead, I loop my arms around him, and he does the same back. Here, in our lake, the water holds us close. Here, in our lake, we are all together. And this is just a reminder. My name is Andy Bombeck, and I hope you're enjoying the Children's Story Hour. And as I mentioned at the beginning of today's program, for the second half hour, I'm going to continue reading the novel that I've been reading now for about 2 months, titled Angus Thongs and Full Frontal Snogging, Confessions of Georgia Nicholson. I am a facsimile of a sham of a fax of a person. Georgia Nicholson's life is far from simple. Her cat, Angus, is the size of a small Labrador. Her 3-year-old sister may have peed somewhere in her room. And her best friend, Jazz, thinks she looks like an alien just because she accidentally shaved off her eyebrows. Enter the sex god. This just might turn out to be the most fabbity fab year ever. Okay, last time, Vidi, Elizabeth's dad, went to New Zealand to look for a job. The designer, Jim, visited their house. They are now at school, and Robbie, the sex god, wants to talk to Jazz, that's Elizabeth's best friend. And that's where we left off last time. Monday, February 22nd, 4:15 p.m. Something really odd happened today when Jazz and I left school. Robbie was at the school gate in his mini. He was leaning against it. I wish my legs didn't go all jellyoid when I see him. How do you make yourself not like someone? I think you're supposed to concentrate on some of their bad points. Maybe he's got horrible hands. I looked at his hands. They're lovely, all strong looking, but quite artistic too. Like he could put up a shelf and also take you to a plateau of sensual pleasure at the same time. I bet he doesn't rest his hand on your breast. I wish he would. Shut up! Anyway, I was getting ready to put on my coolest look, and he said, "Hello, Jazz. How are you?" Jazz flushed and said, "Oh, hi, Robbie. Yeah, fine, thanks. And you?" He said, "Cool." Then he said, "Jazz, could I speak to you sometime? Maybe you would come for a coffee next Wednesday after school?" And Jazz went, yes, fine. See you then." I was quite literally speechless. When we got to Jazz's house, I just walked in through the gate, through the door, and straight up the stairs into her bedroom. It was like I had a fur ball in my throat. I thought I was going to choke and explode and poo myself all at the same time. Jazz sat down on her bed and just went, "Foof." I said, "What do you mean by foof?" And she said, "Just that, foof." I said, "Well, what does he want to see you about?" And she looked at her nails in a very annoying way. "I don't know." I said, "Well, you won't go, will you?" And she said, well, he asked me to go for a coffee, and I said I would. I went on, yes, but you won't go, will you? She looked at me, why shouldn't I go? He said he wanted to talk to me. I couldn't believe it. But you know, he's my sworn enemy. Jazz went all reasonable, yes, but he's not my sworn enemy. He seems to really like me. I was beyond the valley of the livid. Jazz, if you are my friend, you will not go and meet Robbie. She just went silent and tight-lipped. I slammed out of her house. Tuesday, February 23rd, 11 p.m. I left the house 10 minutes early today and walked on the other side of the road. Jazz usually hangs about outside her gate between 8:35 and 8:45, and then she walks on if I don't turn up. I ran like mad past her house, keeping to cover, and arrived 10 minutes before assembly. Hawkeye stopped me. I've never seen you early for anything. What's going on? I'll be keeping my eye on you. Honestly, she is so suspicious. I don't suppose she's got anything else to do, no real life of her own. When I went into the assembly hall, I didn't stand in my usual place. I went and talked to Rosie. Jazz came in to where we stand together. She caught my eye and gave me a half smile, but I gave her my worst look. I didn't see her again until lunch when she came into the loo. I was sort of trapped because I was drying my fringe under the hand dryer. I'd slept on it funny, and it was all sticking up. My head was upside down, and she said, look, this is really silly. We can't fall out over some bloke. I said, no, young some bloke. She said, pardon? I stood up and faced her. Jazz, you know what I've been through with Robbie. He is not just some bloke. She was being all Mrs. Reasonable Knickers. What are you so bothered about? It's just coffee. At the moment. I pounced on that like a rat on a biscuit. What do you mean, at the moment? She was putting chapstick on, pouting in the mirror. She really has snapped. She thinks she looks like Claudia Schiffer. I'm just saying, it's only coffee at the moment. If anything else happens, of course, I will let you know first. That's when I kicked her on the shin. How dare she? That is it. I'm never speaking to her again. Saturday, February 27th, 10 a.m. Mom up and humming in the kitchen, like a happy person, whatever that is. I've made a list of my friends. I have 12 close casuals, 20 social only, and 6 inner circle. You know, the kind of friends who would cry properly at your funeral. Libby is too small to be a chum, although she's a better chum than some, if you know what I mean. Jazz is not on my list. 11:30 a.m. I wonder if I've got enough friends. I worry that if British Telecom ask me for 10 friends and family for my list of cheap calls, I would have to count the astrological phone line for Librans, which I ring more often than not. 11 a.m. Doorbell went. Mom shouted, "Will you get that?" It was Jim. He really is quite cool and fit-looking. He was wearing a T-shirt, and you could see his muscly arms. I smiled at him. Maybe I need an older man to teach me the ways of love. 11:05 a.m. Mom came rushing out of the bedroom with Libs. Take Libby for a walk, love, will you? Thanks. Now, Jim. Would you like a cup of coffee? He said, well, I wouldn't say no. I've got a bit of a hangover. She giggled. Yes, she giggled and said, you're terrible. Did you have a good time? They went off into the kitchen. He said, yeah, we went to this club. It's a laugh. You should come one night. She giggled and said, be careful. I might take you up on that. I couldn't hear what happened after that because Libby hit me with her monkey. "Out now," she said. So I had to go. What next? My mom goes off with a builder while my daddy is trying to build a new life for her in the Antipodes. Actually, when put like that, it seems fair enough. Vatty sent a letter and some photos from Wangamata. In his letter, he said the village has the most geothermal activity in the world. When I had lunch in the garden the other day, the table was heaving and lurching around. I could hardly eat my steak. The ground lurches and heaves around because underneath the earth's crust, thousands of billions of tons of molten steam is trying to get out. The trees go backwards and forwards. The sheep go up and down. Oh, very good, Vatty. I'll be over there on the next flight. Not. And he sent some pictures of his New Zealand mates. They were all heavily bearded, like the Rolf Harris quadruplets. Still, he is my Vatty. I will have to have a word with Mum in order to save the family. 12:05 p.m. Can't be bothered. March. My dad has become Rolf Harris. Monday, March the 1st, 10:30 a.m. Still not speaking to Jazz, but things have gone horribly wrong in that she is not speaking to me either. I don't know how this has happened, as I was supposed to be in charge. It's bloody difficult coming to school because if she gets ahead of me, I have to walk really, really slowly behind her because my legs are longer. Wednesday, March the 3rd, 9 a.m. Today's the day that Jazz is to meet Robbie after school for a coffee. I wonder if Lindsay knows about this. I wonder if I have a duty to tell her. 3 p.m. I can't help myself. I have been trailing Jazz around all day. I notice she has her very short skirt on, and she's done her hair. Perhaps I could leap on her as she comes out of the loo and duff her up. Or I could pay Jackie and Allison to do it. 3:15 p.m. Rosie, Ellen, and Jules are not taking sides in this, which I hate. How dare they be so fair-minded? Rosie said, he's only asked her for a coffee to talk. You don't know what about. And Jules said, it's a free world, you know. You can't make people do anything. How dim and thick can you be? I'd stop speaking to them, but then I wouldn't have anyone to talk to at all. 4:05 p.m. Well, here's there in this mini. He's there in his mini. Where is Lindsay? Perhaps there will be a fight at the gates. There was a fight once before, but that was Mr. Atwood and an ice cream man. Elvis had gone to see him off. He went up to the van and said, clear off! And the ice cream man said, make me, short ass. Elvis took off his glasses and his cap and said, come out of that van and I will. So the ice cream man did come out of his van, and he was about 25 foot tall. And Elvis said, right, well, I've told you. That's my final word. As soon as you have sold as many ice creams as you want, you must leave the school boundaries. 4:08 p.m., no sign of Lindsay. I said to Rosie and Jules and Ellen, where's Lindsay? And Rosie said, she's playing badminton. For heaven's sakes, she's so wet. Some sniveling, scheming snot takes her fiancé/boyfriend, and all she can do is run around in sports knickers, hitting a ping-pong ball with some feathers stuck in it. 4:10 p.m., Jazz came out in boots, suede boots, knee length, with heels. Oh, she'll get offered money if she hangs around in the streets looking like that. 4:12 p.m. She has reached the gates, Robbie has opened the door of his Mini and gone round the other side and driven off. Home, 4:38 p.m. I'm going mad. What are they doing now? 5 p.m. Ring Rosie. Have you heard anything? Rosie, no. I said, well, call me if you do. 5:20 p.m. I've called everyone, and nobody has heard anything yet. It's like being in one of those crap plays we have to study. I'll be left lonely and looking out to sea at the end, possibly with a beard. 5:30 p.m. I've just found I've got hairs growing out of my armpits. How did they get there? They weren't there yesterday. 5:40 p.m. I've got some on my legs as well. I'd better distract myself by getting rid of them with Mum's razor. 6 p.m. Oh, God, I'm hemorrhaging. My legs are running with blood. I had to staunch the flow with Mum's dressing gown. She'll kill me if she finds out. I'd better wash it. 6:10 p.m. Put it in the washing machine with some other stuff before she gets home. 6:30 p.m. Phone rings. It's only Mum. She and Libby are round at Uncle Eddie's and won't be home until later. And I've got to get my own tea. Quell surprise. Go to the fridge. 6:32 p.m. I wonder what I'll have. I know. I'll have this moldy old tin of beans. That is the only thing in there. 7 p.m. Phone rings. I fell over the cord, getting to it. Legs started bleeding again. It was Rosie. Jazz just phoned. I almost screamed at her. And? Well, they had coffee, she says. He really is fantastic looking and also very funny. And? Well, he wanted to talk to her about Tom. I started laughing. Ha, 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 ha. And she wore her boots. Ha, 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 ha. Rosie went on, yes. He wanted to know if she still likes Tom because he still likes her. I put the phone down. Tom, who cares? Ha, 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 ha. Life is fabby, fab, fab, fabbity, fab, fab. 7:30 p.m. La, 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 fabbity, fab, fab. 7:40 p.m. Yum, yum, beans. Lovely, lovely beans. 10 p.m. Oh, dear, slight problem. Mum's dressing gown has shrunk to the size of a doll's dressing gown. It might fit Libby, I suppose. Still, fabbity, fab, fab. I'll think about it tomorrow. For now, I must just dance about a bit to a loud tune. 11 p.m. Heard Mom came in, but I pretended I was asleep. I've hidden the dressing gown at the bottom of my wardrobe. Thursday, March the 4th, 8:30 a.m. Jazz was waiting for me at her gate. I saw her and started walking really slowly and pretending to be looking through my bag for something. Then I acted like I'd forgotten something and had to go home for it. I walked back and waited behind a hedge for about 4 minutes and then walked back again. Hurrah! She was gone. My plan worked. But just as I passed her gate, she popped up from behind her hedge. She walked alongside me and didn't say anything, and neither did I. It's funny being silent. You have to be careful to not make any noise. You can't belch or anything, or even clear your throat in case the other person thinks you are going to speak first. When we got to school, she handed me a letter. I wouldn't take it at first, but I quite wanted to read it, so I did eventually put it in my bag. 1 p.m. First opportunity I've had to read the letter because I didn't want Jazz to know that it was keen to read any stupid thing she had to say. The letter said, Dear Georgie, I am sorry that a boy has come between us. It will never happen again. I was stupid and didn't think of your feelings, even though you are my best friend. If there is anything I can do to be your best friend again, I will do it. P.S. He isn't engaged to Lindsay. 1:15 p.m., so Jazz thinks she can just forget the whole sorry affair. Drop it just like that? Well, it will take more than a note to make me change my mind about her. 1:20 p.m. Jazz found me by the vending machine, and she was a bit nervous. Let her suffer. 1:21 p.m. Jazz went, and I said, what do you mean he's not engaged to Lindsay? In my room, 5 p.m., Jazz is helping me stretch Mum's dressing gown. As a punishment for her appalling behavior, she has promised that she will say it was her who put it in the washing machine. My mom won't get cross with Jazz. 5:15 p.m., the dressing gown is exactly the same doll size, except that now it has very long arms like an orangutan's. 5:25 p.m., apparently Robbie was very surprised that he was supposed to be engaged. When he asked Jazz why she thought that, she had to pretend that someone had told her. 5:30 p.m., Jazz is plucking my eyebrows. She said, so what do you think I should do about Tom? Robbie says he still likes me and that the girl at the dance was his cousin. I said, oh, does that mean he can't get a girlfriend then? Jazz said mid-pluck, Georgie, don't start again. Do you think I should give him another chance? I thought, what am I, an agony aunt? But I said, well, maybe, but I'd play a bit hard to get. Don't kiss him on your first date. Well, unless he really wants to. Midnight. Got away surprisingly easy with the it was Jazz, I'm innocent plan. Re the dressing gown. Mom seems even more mad than ever. And how long can it take to decorate one room? Jim is taking forever. I'm not really surprised. He spends most of his time sitting around giggling with Mom. Libby called him Dad the other day. Ho-hum. 1 a.m. Looking up at the sky from my bed, I can hear an owl hooting and all is well with the world. Robbie is not engaged. Thank you, baby Jesus. Tuesday, March the 16th, 3 p.m. Miss Stamp says I show promise at tennis. It is very nice slamming the ball across the court past people, or not past them in Rosie's case, when it hit her in the face this afternoon. Her glasses went all sideways, which I thought was very funny. I couldn't serve for ages because of laughing so much. 10:45 p.m. Woke up from a dream of winning Wimbledon. I think I may become sexually active, as the dream only really got interesting in the dressing room. First, there was the usual stuff, you know, the final ace, the crowd going mad, going up for my trophy, Princess Margaret handing it over and saying, absolutely first class, most thrilling. It made me wish I still played. Me saying, ha, 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 I find it hard to believe you've ever played anything, ma'am, except gin rummy. Then a quick wave and into the dressing room. Once in the privacy of the changing room, I began to get undressed for a well-deserved shower. When I had got down to my well-filled D-cup bra and knickers, I was started to find someone had come into the room. It was Leonardo DiCaprio. He said, I'm sorry, did I startle you? Then he started covering my quivering but extremely fit and tanned body with kisses. Just then, someone else came in. I pulled away from Leo, but Leo said, oh, it's okay, it's only Brad. And Brad Pitt came in and joined us. Monday, March 22nd, 2 p.m. It's almost embarrassing how friendly Jazz is being. A few days without my hilarious and witty conversation has reminded her of how much she likes me. In a roundabout way, I suggested this to her on the way to school. Jazz, I suppose a few days without my hilarious and witty conversation has reminded you of how much you like me. She said, ha, 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 but then saw my face and said, oh, yes, how true. Wednesday, March the 31st, Assembly, 9:08 a.m. I nearly passed out with laughing this morning. As we were praying, Rosie whispered, have a look at Jackie's nose, pass it on. So the word passed right along the line. I couldn't see anything at first because Jackie had her head down and her hair was hanging over her face. Then, as people were shuffling around to start the hymn, I went, Jackie, psst! She looked up and round at me. The end of her nose was completely black. She looked like a panda in a wig. I almost wet myself. It was so funny. Our whole line was shaking. Jackie looked daggers at us, but that only made it worse. There's nothing funnier than a really cross panda. We staggered into the loo and were bent over the sinks, crying with laughter. At last, when I could speak, I said, what? What happened? Ellen said, you know, that DJ she was raving about, well, he got drunk with his mates, came to meet Jackie, and thought it would be very funny to give her a love bite on the end of her nose. Happy days. April, the snogging report. Tuesday, April the 6th, 5 p.m. Had a game of tennis against Lucy Doyle from the fifth form, and I beat her. I am a genius. 6:30 p.m. Practicing tennis against our wall at home, but it's hopeless. Angus gets the ball and then takes it a few feet away from me and guards it. I go to get it, and he waits until I can nearly get it, and then he walks off with it again. I manage to hit him on the head with my tennis racket, but he doesn't seem to feel pain. And unfortunately, this is where I might have to stop today because we are out of time. I hope that everyone enjoyed today's program as much as I did. I want to say hi to all the listeners out there, and I want to encourage everyone to tune in when I continue next week with the interesting novel, Angus, Thongs, and Full Frontal Snogging. Until then, I hope everyone has a great day and a fantastic week. So long and take care, everyone. Goodbye.